This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 35 for December 18th, 2005. Laporte here, and a kind of an unusual confabulation of TWiTs today. Patrick Norton is out of reach of the internet. I'm not sure what he's up to, but we've found some pretty good replacements for him. May I introduce the gang? Kevin Rose is here. Hasn't been here in a long time. Very busy with Dig.com. Welcome back, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for having me back, though.
Oh, you're a TWiT. You're an original TWiT, so there's always a home for you. I think people were starting to speculate that, you know, it's something happened, you disappeared or something. But no, you've just been very busy.
Yeah, I've been all over the place the last few weeks. But finally, I'm back in the States and I'm here for a while. So
good, good. And of course, Steve Gibson from Irvine, the king of security. Mr.
Join
Hamachi this week.
Yeah. Oh, boy, yeah.
Well, if you haven't heard episode 18 of Security Now, it's all about this new VPN program he's fallen in love with. And then, of course, John C. Dvorak.
Who gets Hello.
No spam. It'd be no show without John. And a special guest. I'm very excited.
Celebrity.
A celebrity guest to have here in our little round table this week. Steve Wozniak, the creator of the Apple One, the Apple II, and the founder of Apple Computers. Woz, it's great to have you.
Yeah, this is very unfortunate because I'm probably the one who least wants to be and least tries to be a celebrity.
And you are the celebrity. And all of us are working so hard to be celebrities. You don't like that that mantle of celebrity?
Plus and minus, more minus than anything, because I was a real shy guy. I just wanted to be quiet and have a life and, you know, do my fun technical things. I'm really drawn away from that more by the celebrity than anything.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, the results are good. I meet a lot of great people, and I get a chance to do a lot of good things, you know, helpful things to the world. But I just as soon skip it and be able to... I can't go show and just look at products and get, you know, interested and act like a normal dummy.
A lot of the things that you want to do, Steve, do require that you, you know, have money in order to make these things happen. So the celebrity power, you know, probably helps you to achieve some of the goals.
Well, yeah, it probably does. But I don't think I try to apply it, and I don't think it goes in any big ways there. I mean, I look at the things that are important in my life, and they don't really delve around the celebrity at all.
Is there one surprising side effect or benefit of celebrity that you didn't expect that you do enjoy?
Oh, the amount of time just taken to talk to people, strangers and everyone, and try to listen to their ideas and be polite to them. I mean, it can be, you know, more than 24 hours a day.
I'm impressed, though. You're very available. I mean, Woz and I went on the Mac Mania cruise it's a year ago now in November. And is just the most agreeable and open and willing to talk to people. And, of course, you spend all your time doing that.
It's so interesting. Meeting people actually is one of the greatest things that I get. Yeah. Just aside from celebrity, it's just actually from the celebrity even. But I get to talk to people and hear their stories and share some of mine and then get into joking. And I'm real shy at first, but once I get to know someone, then watch out.
Yeah, really, no kidding. He was talking about laser pointers with my son, and now my son wants, because Woz has some way of hacking these laser pointers so that they can melt things, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, brother.
I will tell you, one of my latest gags is I placed this metal torpedo-shaped device on a table, like with a waiter there, you know, in a restaurant, and I show them how you can shine one of these powerful, powerful lasers on it, and it starts to jiggle just a little, and then it wiggles more, and then I can finally, with the laser, get it spinning, and I explain, I use a line that my son came up with, light is heat. Of course, they don't see the magnet I'm holding under the table.
Yeah, it's a little magic trick.
Hey, Woz, what kind of car are you driving nowadays?
Mostly my Prius, 2005 Prius.
I almost bought a Prius. Should I buy a Prius?
I love the car. I can recommend it as one of the best general cars for almost everyone. Some people object to some pieces of it. I'm around a lot of people that it's too cheaper to drive a Toyota. But God, I love Actually, I love things when they happen automatically, and the one thing I get in that car that works is I get in it and my telephone becomes hands-free.
The cool thing also is the car knows you're approaching, right? So it unlocks its doors as you get close to it.
And yes, and I love that. And actually, I understand you can buy watches that'll do that for you.
That'll unlock your car. Oh, that's neat.
They'll unlock the Toyota Prius.
So I see.
Unfortunately, the watches I found didn't exist or they didn't work. So.
They don't tell the time, but they do unlock the car.
They didn't look good. They didn't look good.
Yeah.
But I also love, maybe more than anything else, I love the way the car feels. It's a smooth, quiet acceleration. You almost don't notice. And it's only supposed to go like 103 miles an hour, but I went down to LA the other day and we got it up to 108 on the flat. And the way you and we used the laser as a piece of technology to clear traffic ahead of us. Because the cars, the trucks are in the slow lane, you just zoom past them, but there's occasionally some idiot driver in the left lane, and you just shine the laser down in his rearview mirror, and they see a green flash, and all they do is hit their brakes and pull over.
Oh my God.
One after another will clear. Day at nighttime, it's dangerous because if you do it to a cop, you're going to get in serious trouble.
Hey, Waz, I just want to let you know that I actually got handcuffed for doing just that. I had a red laser, and I shined it at someone, and they thought it was a gun, and they pulled my car over. The cops pulled me over, and they searched the car for a gun, and they handcuffed me and put me on the hood. It was crazy.
I know people have been arrested, charged, even convicted for some, and the crime is using a laser to annoy people is actually a crime. But if you're using it for fun and they enjoy it and you're not really trying to scare them, using it to scare them is the crime.
Right. Well, and as a cat toy, a laser pointer is such an amazing cat toy. They just go chasing themselves all over the place. This is wonderful.
These bright green lasers get people to pull over so fast, but then when they see a little Prius slide go by them, they're probably pissed.
Yeah,
one guy shined his brights on me.
Coming at you with a gun if you keep this up. Jeez,
one guy shined his brights on me.
Really? Yeah. Now, wait, do you use a green instead of a red because you don't want people to think you're targeting them with your laser sights?
I carry green, red, and blue, and the blue is my most valuable gadget because you can't buy it and they aren't made. They aren't really sold.
Doing a blue laser is tough, huh?
Yeah, blue handheld laser. There is a solid-state material that lasers blue. It's very expensive, and it's not made into laser pointers, but I got the company to build me one.
Wow, very cool.
See, there you go, the benefit of celebrity.
Yes, and when you take the green laser and the red laser and the blue laser and you shine them on a bald head and have them all going in circles, and it takes about three people, because one person can't hold two lasers and do them very effectively. It is so funny to see those three colors.
If you could do it fast enough, you could do a TV show. Have you done any laser hacking, Kevin Rose? Is this something you're into?
No, it was just one of those things where I bought one of the lasers. I thought it would be fun to do the exact same thing, but in Las Vegas, they take it a little more seriously. So,
live and learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, a friend of mine luckily got arrested recently for that. Her daughter had shined the laser on some kind of daughter, climbed up on the roof when the cops came, and she said the daughter wasn't home. And
I'm kind of sorry I brought up the question now.
No, I'm enjoying this. This is great. All right, I suppose we should get to some tech news. Before we do that, I just want to mention a couple of things. First of all, Waz is going on another Mac Mania cruise, and I know Captain Neil would be really upset if I didn't mention that we're going to Mexico on Mac Mania 4, February 4th through 11th. You're still on for that, right, Waz?
I am on for that. I'm excited for that. And right after that, I'm heading over to New Zealand for I'm representing the United States of America in the very first International Segway Polo Match.
Oh man! Well, I thought you invented Segway Polo.
No, we did. Our group did, and we didn't quite invent it because a lot of people were talking about it. But we were the first ones that started playing it, and we played it for a year and a half, and we've got the long-term reputation. So most of the Segway Polo groups in the world use our rules, and we're inviting the Chinese and the Australians, and hoping that turns out great.
Too fun.
Isn't that great? Waz has a number of Segways, and they play. You play in Mountain View? I forgot where you play, but on the peninsula.
We play in Sunnyvale and Oakland, and I wanted to bring the Segways on the cruise and was told it was going to be too inconvenient.
Oh, you can't?
Oh, no. Oh, bummer.
Man.
Are there after factory mods to the Segway to do cool things?
Like polo?
Well, there are. One of the things is
take off any speed governors, for example.
The key tells you how fast it goes, and I went on the online and got the codes for the speed and the codes for the CRC and figured out all the algorithms, and then I programmed a little processor to reburn the keys with different speed codes. But I'm so good a person, I only programmed them for slower codes.
Oh.
But you know, people ask me, how fast have you taken it? Because the legal limit is 12.5 miles an hour, and I always tell them the truth. I've taken mine 60 miles an hour without a helmet.
Oh my God, you're crazy.
Without a helmet.
It'll go that fast?
Oh, no, it's in the back of his Hummer. How fast will the Segway go if you took off all the governors?
They have extra governing down in the base that I haven't gone to and tried to reverse engineer. Right. That would be a big job, and that one is going to be, so it's 12 and a half is the fastest I've really gone.
Well, a plug for the Geek Cruise, geekcruises.com. Waz and I and David Pogue and a lot of other people will be on that, and that should be a lot of fun. And if Apple goes ahead with its Intel Macs, maybe we'll be that's all we'll be talking about, because it'll be a month after the Mac World Expo. So there might be a lot to talk about.
Hey, that should be a lot of fun. Guess what just happened?
What?
My nerd meter went to 10. I've never seen that before. Unbelievable.
John hates it when we get all nerdy and stuff like that. So we'll talk about the tech news right now. AOL, this is kind of an interesting story. AOL about 2 weeks ago said, we're going to dump Google search for MSN search. Google, it turns out, made $400 million this year alone on the AOL links to Google. That's a valuable commodity. So they went to Google, went to AOL and said, no, you can't do that. They offered them $1 billion, took a 5% stake in America Online. Google now is a 5% owner of AOL. And this is where I get a little hinky about the whole thing. They also are giving AOL pride of place in their ads. They're going to, I'm worried.
Yeah, a little bit of a sellout.
Do you think that Google might now be a little bit more interested in promoting AOL links? Guess not. Hello?
No, I've been trying to figure this story out, and I haven't really come to any conclusions like that. I mean, there's, for one thing, getting a piece of AOL and people switching from one search engine to another and all this kind of, it seems like a lot of politics here, and the fact of the matter is, if you're going to be using a search engine unless somebody has a better search engine, I don't know why you'd swap out at Google.
Well, I'll tell you why you'd leave Google if all of a sudden Google's results were tainted by partnerships they'd made.
I don't think it's going to happen.
They wouldn't do that.
I actually think it makes sense.
How so?
I think that AOL's new entries into multimedia content of the world, entertainment content, a lot into music. They did the Live 8 and all that, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. making a big push in that direction. And that's sort of an expansion area that makes a lot of sense for Google.
Do you think AOL's reputation is starting to be buffed up a little bit by this relationship with Google, doing things like Live 8? They're no longer seen as kind of the newbie internet service, but really more of a big player in content?
I think it's going to be a slow switch that way.
Well, people really have an opinion about AOL.
Well, how's AOL Radio doing?
I think it's doing very well. They say they have 10 million uniques. Of course, we're part of AOL Radio, and we should disclaim that right up front. They broadcast this show on their podcast channel and give us bandwidth in return. No money, but bandwidth.
You might also wonder what Microsoft was offering AOL to carry MSN in lieu or in favor of Google, because we know that Microsoft's got a big concern for the growth of Google and what's happening in the future. So Gates may have been offering AOL something really substantial.
Washington Post says they were offering hundreds of millions of dollars, but certainly Microsoft could have given them $1 billion. I mean, why not?
Does anybody else but me find it pathetic that Microsoft has to pay people off for them to use a search engine?
Well, that's the thing. I think really it was on AOL's part, it must have been a bluff, because certainly they couldn't have wanted to shift from Google to MSN search. Their users wouldn't have been happy about that.
I think it was a bluff. AOL needs this right now, because if you think about it, they're really getting out of that whole walled garden thing.
Right.
And so they're making their move into, they need this money. They're going to get all this free ad dollars to promote all of their new sites they're going to be launching over the next year. So it just makes sense for AOL.
Yep. And to have Prime placement on Google now as a result. I mean, that's super valuable.
Oh, I think it's a very good deal for AOL. It'd be hard to what could Microsoft, I mean, obviously Microsoft could offer more money, but what else could they offer compared to what Google's given them? I think it's just a good deal for AOL. Yep.
Maybe Microsoft should spend most of its time and money improving its search engine. Does anybody think that's a possibility? It's like a really good idea?
I think they're doing a lot of R&D on the search. I mean, I've seen a lot of stories saying MSN targets Google and...
Yeah, there's a lot of talk, and I see a lot of talk, but I don't see much action. And I'll tell you why I say that. It's because I really monitor the Dvorak.org/blog to an extreme. And I see those robots when they come through, and I count them up, and I look at robots coming through. And by far, Google hits the site, and other sites that I monitor, by a factor of 10 over MSN. And then the second place is Yahoo, not even MSN. And I don't even know what Yahoo's doing, but they come by about one-third as much.
I think that's fair. I think it's Google number one, Yahoo number two, and everybody else far behind.
Well, and Microsoft likes to buy things that they can't create, or they're very slow to create things. So it makes sense that they would throw money, which is what they have, to compensate for what they don't have, which is, you know, a really contemporary search. They may in 10 years, but there's no way to cheat that. I mean, there's no way to fake having a good search the way they are able to fake having good anything else.
Well, there may not be a way to cheat it, but they could at least put their bots out there or increase the number of them. I mean, they could do that.
Well, I think they're doing some really interesting stuff. If you go to sandbox.msn.com, they have their search results clustering stuff, their new start.com, which is like the Google IG killer, and there's a few different things on their little tools that they've been starting to slowly roll out.
Have you played with live.com, Microsoft's new start page? It's kind of like the start.com. Microsoft.com. What do you think?
I play with the live maps.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff, but it all feels like it's following on. You know, it doesn't feel like it's innovative. It feels like, well, let's do something like Google.
It's like 1999 portals all over again. Yeah. But just now you can move the content around.
Yeah, it's with Ajax.
Yeah.
Well, here's an interesting question. Do you use Google or do you use Yahoo? Has anybody moved to Yahoo?
Why would you move to Yahoo? You'd move from Yahoo.
Some people are saying Yahoo's doing a better job. In fact, we were talking about that the other day.
You got to put dark glasses on to go to Yahoo's page. I mean, and it just jumps. You can't find anything. It's just, it's a disaster. But I do know from, actually from a friend of mine who's spoken to Google engineers that they believe Yahoo produces better results than their own search.
So what you need is something that scrapes Yahoo's search and gives you the results in a clean page. What do you use, Waz?
Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so clean.
It's real straightforward, I guess.
He uses a laser.
Have you seen the new, has anybody tried the new Yahoo Mail beta?
It looks really cool.
Isn't it slick?
Yeah.
Yahoo bought Oddpost about a year ago, which it was sad to me because Oddpost was the coolest internet mail. They were really duplicating Microsoft Outlook's user interface using some very slick DHTML and CSS. And finally, the Yahoo has come out with their, you know, with the new interface. And I think anybody who has a Yahoo Mail account should be able to sign up for it, even a free account. And I've been playing with it. It's great. Is it a little slow for you to load?
I only played for it with it once, so yeah. I haven't gone back in.
When you're doing all that Ajax stuff, you've got to preload a lot of stuff.
Well, talking about Ajax, has anybody looked at ProtoPage?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Well, I don't know if it's cool or not. I've been looking at it. It looks like it should be cool.
It is cool. In fact, it's a nice tie-in. We're going to interview the founder and creator of ProtoPage. It's just a two-person company on Inside the Net on Tuesday, so you can hear the interview with Andre. ProtoPage.com. This is like the ultimate Ajax. You've played with it, yes, Kevin?
Yeah, I played around with it a little bit.
The idea is you could use it as a way of kind of creating your own homepage or sharing it with other people. So there are people who use it. Like, there's a husband and wife, Andre told us, who use it to pass notes to each other, like shopping lists and things like that. You can also put RSS feeds in it and your own backgrounds, and it's pretty cool.
Does anybody remember desktop.com from way back?
Desktop.
Yeah, I vaguely do.
What was that?
It was just like this, just like ProtoPage, but it was way back before the Ajax times.
Well, you know, what is Ajax besides DHTML, which Microsoft was promoting 6 years ago? I mean, isn't it just DHTML?
Well, it's like asynchronous JavaScript. I mean, it's an easy way to pull live content without having to refresh the page.
That's what DHTML was. The idea was there's content that you can open up as a window without rebuilding the page. I mean, unless there's something I'm missing, I don't see that it's anything new. It's just they gave it a name, made it sexy, and it's not Microsoft.
And all the browsers now support it, so it's
well, that's true.
Becoming, yeah, so
that was the big problem with DHTML. It was Internet Explorer only, really.
You know, I would talk. You know, during the era when Bill was first getting busted by the government, I ran into him and chatted with him about that a little bit. But he brought up this HTML
thing.
Yeah,
about 97 or 98, this was Microsoft.
Yeah, it was like
push.
A big deal. And he said that he made the comment, I was kind of baffled by it. He says, yeah, I think that this is the future of the internet, blah, blah, blah. And I think he's thinking about XML and he just got mixed up, although Bill's not the type to do that. He usually doesn't, you know, just start talking about one thing while really meaning another. But and to this day, I've been kind of baffled by it because the trend really has been toward XML, you know, in regards to the net, generally speaking. Not necessarily in terms of like this kind of thing where you're moving stuff around, but And the whole DHTML thing just kind of died on the vine, I thought. Does anybody see it differently?
That's kind of what you're seeing here. Is you're seeing a combination of JavaScript, cascading style sheets, HTML2, and there is XML in it as well. And that's kind of what Ajax is. I mean, I'm sure a developer will say, well, no, DHTML was this and not that. But it's very similar, and the effects are similar. Remember, there were DHTML games. People had written games in DHTML.
Right. I do remember that. I think there's still some out there.
And is the whole Ajax thing easily cross-platform? Does it run on all the current browsers?
All the browsers, yeah.
Cool.
There is no such thing as Ajax, though. I mean, it's really it's a hodgepodge of web technologies that somebody just decided to label.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Kevin?
I mean, you're absolutely right.
Working with it more than anybody I know. I mean,
yeah, but the funny thing is, like, all the sites that I see that are just Ajax sites now, the big push is, like, you see people, you can move Windows around, or you can, you know, something flashes and does something crazy.
Like Google IG or Microsoft Start.
Yeah. I think we're going to see that for a while, but, I mean, the balance that you have to find as someone that's building a site is that mixture of actually value from the tool that you're creating and not just about, you know, being able to move around a window just because you can. And that's what we're seeing right now.
That's ProtoPage is all gee whiz and very little content. It's a cool use of Ajax. But it's cool. Hey, speaking of Bill, he's the person of the year. Bill and Melinda Gates and Bono are Time Magazine's 2005 Persons of the Year.
Bono?
You got to see the picture of Bono looking very, you know, he's got the shades. He's looking very cool and kind of angry. He's looking creepy. He's looking like a derelict. And then there's Bill and Melinda standing there next to them. And they all have a globe. It's a very weird. And on the cover of Time Magazine, Bono's in between Bill and Melinda. She doesn't look happy about it. So I don't know. It's a weird trio. The idea is that they all have done a lot to promote philanthropy.
It's kind of interesting because usually Time Magazine picks the people that have had the most inches in the news that year. And this time it's sort of like it's more on the people have been the most altruistic.
Yeah, it's an unusual kind of choice on their part. And it's a weird combination to bring the Gateses together with Bono.
Of course, you remember the time that Steve Jobs was supposed to be Man of the Year, but they did their interviews and decided he couldn't be, so they made it Machine of the Year.
That's right. The computer was the machine. Why couldn't Jobs be the Man of the Year?
Well, that was 82, wasn't it?
Yeah, the interviewer, Mike Moritz, talked to all these people around the valley that knew Steve Jobs, and basically they told me he just came up with negative story after negative story. And
can't be Man of the Year. Well, you should have been. I mean, you invented the darn thing. What'd make you the Man of the Year? Why?
That should have been a real challenge, finding bad stories about Steve Jobs.
Leave me out of this. I was still trying to go to school anonymously.
That's right. You were being Rocky. You weren't. What was your code name?
Rocky Raccoon Clark, and I have it on my diploma from Berkeley.
You may have seen this in Andy Hertzfeld's got that great folklore.org website where he's putting together just stories after story about not just the Macintosh team, but Silicon Valley in general. But there's a new story there on 1984 in which he said that the Apple board hated the 1984 commercial when they first saw it. They didn't want to air it.
This is so funny because I was so unpolitical. Anything in the company had to do with politics, I wouldn't be near. I had no idea what the commercial would mean to board members. I didn't really know what real board members were. But Steve called me over one night and showed me the ad, and it was just, I was just shocked by the, you know, the science fiction movie, the drama appearance of it. And wow, that is so incredibly great. And he says, well, we're not going to show it. Our board doesn't want to show it. And I said, why? And he said, well, it costs $800,000 to show it on the Super Bowl. And I said, well, I'll pay half of it if you will. I just thought it deserved to be shown, to be seen.
That's awesome. And did you, or did they finally relent?
No, they changed their mind. But I had no idea they didn't like portraying business people in a bad sense was the problem.
Oh, is that it?
What did they think about the next year's commercial where they had these same geeks walking over the cliff?
The IBM Lemmings.
The Lemmings,
Unfortunately, after, you know, a huge success of the commercial and free airplay on all the news shows and things like that, they approved the Lemmings, but I thought that was just awful and sick. I just sat there.
I agree with you.
Just didn't it wasn't it wasn't a great piece of science fiction of film work.
No, not only that, but that was insulting. I thought the other one wasn't insulting in the least. I thought it was just it was fantastic. And of course, it got more free airtime than any other ad in the history of advertising.
The 1984 commercial was really more about where our minds are and not insulting to real people.
Right. And it only aired the once in the Super Bowl and then once before that to qualify for the Clio Awards, right? Did it ever air again?
I don't think so. I heard that it went five times, though, for real, as well as the one that was in the year that got it qualified for the Clio.
Very, very expensive, and yet I think they got their money's worth. People still watch that ad. In fact, there's a great podcast that's bringing back old Apple ads and all sorts of stuff, lots of video, and it's on there. And have you seen that podcast, Steve? I think you might enjoy it. It's just a bunch of old, like they have the old Dick Cavett ad for the Apple II, and it's just fun to see all those old things.
I haven't seen that. I've got my own collection of Apple ads, though. So.
That's true. You probably don't need to see it. You've got them already. Yeah, this is a great... if you've never seen Folklore.org, Andy Hertzfeld's done a great job of just bringing back some great stories. And this one is in there, and when you confirmed it. It's a true story.
Well, the great thing about that book is the stories were really written by the people who were developing the Mac as they developed it.
Right.
And their impressions, their memories, and others' comments on this that add a little bit of features that even a person that's working on something doesn't understand part of a suggestion that went into it. And then you get that cleared up. It was a great book.
Yeah.
You know, I want to interrupt on that. You know, Hertzfeld's folklore.org is an excellent site if you want to hear some of these old stories. But I don't understand the nomenclature here. This is not folklore by any means, so stretch of the imagination.
It's the true
story.
Yeah,
it's essentially written oral history.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think you should go look up folklore in a dictionary before, you know, because it's too late to change the name now.
He's probably the only domain name he could get.
He's a programmer.
He's a programmer, not a writer. And Susan Kerr put a lot of... effort into the look and feel, and it really is nice. They have a kind of needlepoint logo, and I like it. And it's just fun to read these stories. And yeah, he did. I forgot to mention that as you did, Waza, he turned it into a book. But the site continues and is getting bigger all the time.
Speaking of books, I have an autobiography coming out next fall.
Yeah, Gina will be mad if we do not plug this. You worked with Gina Smith to create this memoir. What's it called?
It's good. Well, I'm not going to say it has a name yet. It has a name, but I'm not happy with it.
Oh, is Gina Smith? Is Gina Smith still in the country? I haven't heard hide nor hair from her. That's just a joke because I know she's going to hear that. She's been promising to do the show since when?
I cannot tell you how many days I had to go down and do interviews into a microphone to get it into my voice, and then we had transcripts and worked on those, editing them, and we had to go over every word and every paragraph and change them to get them accurate technically, accurate in time, accurate for what they said, so I wouldn't look like too much of a dummy. But I went through a period of like 3 months where I could only do one thing a day. I was on some drugs for a ruptured disc and I was sleeping 18 hours a day.
Oh, man.
I would get on my Segway. I'd get on my Segway and ride an hour down the road to Campbell. We'd meet at a restaurant, work for a few hours, and then I'd come back home.
I'm impressed.
Day after day. It was a long job.
It will be a must-read, I'm sure, for everybody. You said it's not going to be out till next fall?
Well, I think that's how long it takes. We turned it in November.
It takes a while.
Wow, it's a long time.
So the Segway caused the ruptured disc?
Actually, I think that it was lifting a Segway into my truck caused it, so I use a ramp now.
Yeah, don't lift Segways.
I knew those things were dangerous the first time I saw one.
Trouble. It smells trouble.
Listen, the New York Times said I am the Wayne Gretzky of Segway Polo, and it's really because I was so clumsy at first, I would accidentally bump into people. I couldn't control my position that well, and they just it seemed like I was the rough player.
The Wayne Gretzky of
But I pushed the rules to the limits. It's like when a guy was just about to shoot a goal, I would throw my mallet out of my hand onto the ball and mess up a shot. And they made it legal for a while, but about the third time I did it, they made that one illegal.
Real quickly, other stories. Warner Chappell has issued an apology. Thank goodness. This is the music publishing site company that shut down Paralyric. Have you used Paralyric? It's very cool. But it's sad because the guy who wrote it had to pull it off because the music industry said, you can't. This thing didn't even have lyrics in it. It was just a search engine. When you played a song on iTunes, it would look up the lyrics for you and display them on the screen. And he got ceased and desist out of business. And now they're apologizing. They sent Walter Ritter is the guy. They sent him a letter saying, The goal of our letter to Pairworks was to gain assurance that Pair Lyrics operated according to copyright principles. However, in both tone and substance, the letter was an inappropriate manner in which to convey that inquiry. They apologize.
Yeah, what are weasels? Weasels.
I've never heard this.
I just got a 10 on the weasel meter.
Well, the irony is, yeah, okay, they're not going after Walter because everybody paid attention to that, and we mentioned it and so forth, but now they are going after other lyrics sites, and they are pulling them down. They're saying they're commercial because they have, you know, Google ads on it. And they're trying to get these guys to stop putting up lyric sites. Don't they get that this sells music?
Well, also, you have a right to memorialize something you hear. You have a right to record a song that you hear. Well, good God, you're hearing the lyrics, so why would they force somebody to type them down?
If they're going to make it illegal to listen.
Along with the song. Along with the song, it really should have been an MP3 tag. Should have been the lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. There is an MP3 tag for lyrics. You can put lyrics in. I'll tell you, I think it sells records. If I hear a song on the radio and I can't figure out what it is, I'll enter the lyric into the Google and find the song name and buy the song. Why are they upset about this?
Well, if it was non-commercial, would they have a problem with it, or is it just the fact that they have Google ads and they're making money from it?
That's exactly what they say. They say, we're not going to pull down the non-commercial sites. We're
only going to pull down the sites with Google ads. What difference does it make? Nobody makes money on Google AdSense.
I doubt people are making a lot of money, and it's certainly... What, do they want to license the lyrics? What is the deal? It's crazy. At least we got one apology out of the music industry. We'll never get another one, but enjoy it while you got it. So you have a right, Woz, to memorialize something you hear. What does that mean?
Well, this basically it goes back to like the Sony lawsuit. If you watch a TV show, you have a right to record it for personal reasons. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you may not have a right to decode digital television, but you have a right to point a camcorder at your TV set and record it just to keep a memorabilia around. You saw it. If you hear it on a radio station, you can record. You always could record it for your own personal keeping. Now, making money off it, of course, means you're making money off of somebody else's work,
right,
and they
right.
do deserve a cut.
Although, how much money are they making? Ironically, Google is moving into this space. Now, I'm wondering if the music industry is saying we want to clear the way for Google. Google's added a music listing feature to the search engine, and Google making money on it. Believe me, you can buy the songs and so forth.
Including search by lyric, but I don't think that site's up yet. Part of that service is up yet on Google.
No, and I wonder, will the music industry go after Google, or will Google have to pay license fees?
You know what? Google's got lots of deep. The great thing about Google nowadays is they got deep pockets. I mean, they're going to fight. They can fight these guys. You know, better than anyone.
Yeah, that's a little different going after some guy who writes a shareware program and probably makes $10 a day out of it than going after Google.
If he makes that much. And the other thing is like, you know, these guys are big, tough guys, but I'd like to know why they're not in Malaysia right now, you know, in Kuala Lumpur, busting those guys that have the real piracy operations. They haven't got the nerve to do that, but they'll take on college kids.
The guy who invented the Walkman has been fighting with Sony for 20 years over this. He finally got an apology and a payout from Sony.
And of all things, would you believe he's a Brazilian?
He's a Brazilian.
He was a young Brazilian kid.
You want to tell the story, Woz?
Sure, yeah. He thought about making a portable music device, and he did. And he remembered being with his girlfriend in Switzerland and exactly where they were on a snowy day, and he pulled it out, and they both listened to music, and they had really brought portable music to the world, portable stereo music. And he went after Sony in a few countries where he had patents. He got one deal from Sony that was so ridiculous. It was only on certain models of Walkmans, only sold in Germany. But yes, he kept it up over the years. They put him $3 million in the red, and eventually kept it up. And now he's got a deal, and they aren't disclosing the terms, of course.
As an inventor, I'm sure you're sympathetic to this guy, but you got to. I mean, this guy's even said, you know, I basically wasted my life. I tried to keep other interests up, but this is my whole life has been spent in this litigation.
And it was not his intent.
It's not what he wanted to do, and it's. I kind of feel bad, and on the one hand, and wonder maybe. If he should have just given it up, I don't know. What would you have done?
You wouldn't have a choice. You wouldn't really have a choice. And you know what? There's a book that was put out by the Lemelson Organization based on another inventor. And it's got story after story after story about people that won the Lemelson Prize, like Dean Kamen, inventor of the Segway. And almost case after case after case, they had to go through a lawsuit to finally get their due out of something they invented.
Yeah. Really? So it's not uncommon at all, then?
Not for a lot of the big ones that get found by a small person, and how do they take the credit for it?
Right. I mean, it's hard to fight Sony, but the guy did. So good news.
So I'm floating around, and I found a very interesting program. I'd like to get some feedback from you guys, not necessarily now, but over the next week or so. Has anybody taken a look at it or played with Writely?
No, what is it?
It's www.writely, like write, like as in pen writing, writely.com. And it's a online word processor that's actually quite astonishing. Oh. I never thought that these things would ever work because, the idea of doing a word processor online, I always thought there would be a lot of lag issues and other kinds of problems. But this little product, which is done here in the Bay Area, it's an online word processor. It creates doc files. You can upload things into it, and you can use it as your word processor. It seems to me to be like maybe an entryway to different kinds of portable computing or thin clients or whatever. It's quite interesting. Anyway, I want everyone to look at it and tell me what you think.
Yeah, I'm looking at the page, and I mean the UI looks extensive, just like what you have in front of you, and it looks like it does HTML and complete control of fonts and so forth.
This stuff has to scare Microsoft. It's got the willies out of Microsoft. I'm sure that this is exactly the kind of thing that web services terrifies them, because you can put whole application suites online. Who needs Microsoft Office?
Well, when they worked this smoothly, I'd have to say that. I mean, I was skeptical about this because people were promising this during the initial dot-com boom in the late 90s. It's kind of,
right.
Scott McNeely, the biggest, BSer about this stuff. But, with their, using Java and some of these other technologies that were just so slow, it was like impossible to do it. And we also didn't have the connections we have today. And I was playing with this.
I think 3Office is a good example. It was Java-based, and it was slow. It was painful. But the idea seemed good.
Yeah, but this thing's really snappy. I was shocked by it.
Well, and it looks like it's collaborative because there's a little tag at the bottom that says Sam
yes.
is also editing this document.
Right. You can do multiple. You can put a whole group, kind of a collaboration group together over the net and use the system, which is really valuable.
Maybe we should dump Delicious and use this for our news instead.
It might be better.
We're working under a handicap, folks, because for the last few episodes, we've been using Delicious as a repository for all our news tags. And Delicious went down today. In fact, Kevin, you were talking with Mr. Delicious, right?
Yeah, I spoke with Josh. He said hopefully in the next few hours it'll be back up.
He's blaming MySQL for it.
Yeah, there's some problems.
That's got to be tough. I mean, I'm starting to get a little taste of it just running my own servers for Twit and my other stuff. And in the past, I've always used somebody to run the servers for me. Now that you're running the servers for Dig, this is kind of something people don't really talk about. Keeping those servers up is non-trivial.
It's definitely tricky. I mean, we run into problems all the time. That when you have a master and multiple slaves all trying to work together, there's issues that pop up, at 2 in the morning that you won't see till the next day. And it's just really weird stuff, too. Something that happened a few days ago on Dig is users were digging stories, but they're actually happening. There were negative numbers were showing up. And that's because they were actually hitting the slaves that had kind of fallen behind and weren't keeping syncs with the master. So it's just like, stuff like that doesn't actually throw out warnings to you or tell you that it's broken.
You can't predict it until it happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, with all sites that, especially that are growing this fast, it's really hard to keep up with growth. And I'm sure that's what Josh is going through right now with Delicious.
Getting back to Writely, this is one of a lot of... I mean, I'm starting to do my invoices online with BlinkSale. Backpack is storing stuff for me. I'm starting to use, there's project management. You're just seeing more and more of these web services, and I think this is really exciting. And you're right, John. It works finally.
Yeah, the thing is, there's still this, like the Delicious issue, there's still this thing about scalability. I mean, people talk a big game about it. Google's managed to do it. But how big, when these guys start getting too big, are they going to fall apart on us? Now, in the late 90s, when a lot of these ASPs and all these companies came along promising what we're starting to see now, which is like 6-7 years later, their issue was that they couldn't stay in business long enough. And I used to use a thing that was similar to the Palm desktop that was an online product, and I could get my names and phone numbers online anytime I wanted. And then, somebody, the VC says, hey, even though we gave you all this money, now we actually want you to try to show us that you can make money. And they shut down. And then, in fact, most of the really cool free stuff all shut down from, you know, bad plant, you know, kind of the bad aspects of the venture capital scene. Now these guys are, they're leaner and meaner, and they can stay in business, but can they scale? We don't know.
That's exactly right, because you don't have the, if you don't, and as Kevin's learned, if you don't have the financial resources to add servers as needed, you just fall apart. You would think that with the Yahoo input, that Delicious wouldn't have that issue, but I guess it's too new to have taken.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you also have to plan the site to scale that way from the beginning, otherwise you're going to have to rewrite all the code.
Did you find that to be an... I think we talked about that, didn't you? That Dig almost had to be rewritten because of that.
Parts of it did, because it was just a side project at first, you know, and then all of a sudden you get hit with this huge mass amount of users, and you have to rewrite certain queries and things that are slowing it down. So, but I think Google's going to do the right thing. That, you know, they're planning this whole online office initiative that hopefully we'll see sometime in 06. I don't know.
They're going to have some tough competition from this Yahoo Mail beta. I really like. I mean, this, you got to try it. It's basically Outlook, except it's online. It's your Yahoo Mail.
I've heard good things about Google Calendar. I have a buddy of mine that has access or has played with it, and it's supposed to be really good and be out in the next couple weeks.
Well, and you're right, Leo. All of this has to just be scaring Gates to death, because it's what he's been worried about from the beginning. It's the reason he was so fanatical about Netscape in the start, is he recognizes that the internet can move the value from his OS over to the net and
his apps,
machine independent. Yes.
Yeah. Who needs Office if you can do it online?
But I'll tell you, you know, speaking of mail, though, I get on Gmail and they made it work with your POP system if you want, and I wanted to. Boy, did they make it hard. Boy, did they hide the secret little port you have to put in to make it work.
I haven't tried it. Wait a minute. Let me think. No, I can get my Yahoo Mail, my Google Mail on my BlackBerry, but I think it might have done auto-discover. I can't remember.
Yes, you can do it on your BlackBerry, but they give you instructions of how to do it. You follow all those instructions, and it doesn't work, and you have to look up some third-party web pages that tell you you have to set your port to such and such for SMTP and for POP.
It doesn't use standard ports.
Right.
Yep.
This is very unstandard.
That, which is a problem, because that'll be blocked in a lot of you know, places that you go if they don't use standard ports. If they used SSL ports, that'd be all right. But
see, no. Places I go, what I do is, for my own server, I use a non-standard SMTP port, and because when I traveled and used port 25,
it's always blocked.
They blocked it. Yeah. They blocked it. Yeah, by using the non-standard, they don't catch it.
Right.
You know, I kind of like the combination approach that I think these guys are going to have to figure out how to do. And I think Rightly maybe has a few ways that you can do this. But for example, I, you know, use the mail servers that Computer Time has, where I get no spam. And but he also, you know, but I can use it with any client. But then when I'm on the road, or if I say I just want to, you know, my machine, say I break my machine, I'm traveling, that can happen. You know, but he also has Squirrel Mail, because everything's IMAP.
Right.
This idea of having, like, you know, this redundant approach to everything, so you don't have to rely on just online, seems to be have an appeal to me.
Well, it does, because for me too, because I use IMAP. But if their server is down or I can't get online, I can't even get. I don't access my mail. I'd have to, you know, it's gone, and that's everything I need is in my email. Email has become the database. How is that true for you guys too? I mean, I basically assume that I can search my email almost instantly, and I just leave everything in there. I don't add stuff to my contract book, because my address book, because I know it's in the email.
I do the same thing.
And that's Google's whole concept with Gmail, of course, and giving us 2 gigs of never delete your email.
But 2 gigs isn't nearly enough. I want to keep 20 years of email.
Why?
Because it's all in there. My life story is in there.
We don't want to hear it.
I can start at the beginning. It started at a small 5,000-watt radio station.
Leo, you can always use POP and keep it on your own hard disk.
Well, and that's kind of, I guess what I'll do is keep an IMAP server, but download it to the POP, because then I can use Spotlight or something like that to search.
But you also want your sent mail in there.
Right. Well, and that's the advantage of having IMAP, is that when I send a message, no matter what system I've sent it from, it shows up in the sent mail on the IMAP server. So I can see my old messages. And that was kind of part of the problem. I was using POP mail on 4 different computers, but they'd get out of sync.
Right.
So what do you do, Mr. Gibson, for your email?
I'm just using Eudora from the old days.
Oh, he's an old-timer.
Yeah. Hey, I use Eudora. One computer, one program.
Yep. You know, I was using Eudora for a long time, then it would blow up a box every once in a while, and I got tired of it. And I found, I did some research on the web, and I found other people, some
a couple of colleges, in fact, where they found the same problem. And I've talked to the Eudora folks about it, and they've never been able to solve this. Now, I assume possibly that maybe with an upgrade or two, that, you know, that's whatever this bug was, it went away. But it blew up a box, and the box was completely gone. It was pop mail. So I mean, I don't get it personally.
You mean a mailbox or your computer? The mailbox.
It was on the computer. I mean, and it was just before pre-IMAP.
Because it uses the Unix MBOX format, I think.
Well, it was a database of some sort. It's like DBase.
Well, I never trust a database. That's true. If it's using a database.
Well, I like you. Eudora just stores everything in flat text files, and now it's got a good built-in indexing search, so you can find things. And I use it the way you do, Leo. When I'm trying to find something that I know happened a few years ago, I'll tell Eudora to find it for me and give it as many keywords and a compound search, and it does the job.
Has anybody tried Thunderbird?
Yeah, Thunderbird's awesome.
You like it?
I like the extensions. They have like tabbed different tabs you can add to it now. It's really turning out to be a nice product.
Do you use it as an RSS reader, Kevin?
No, I use Sage within Firefox.
Yeah, I think I'm going to switch to Thunderbird for a while. Maybe I can go back to Eudora one of these days. But I have all these old systems. And talking about the 25 years, Leo, I don't think it's possible because I have, like, you know, 5 years of mail in some old Eudora boxes, and I got a couple of years of mail in a Mozilla system, and I got,
that's,
you know.
That's true. You get a new computer, you can't keep copying it over, I guess.
Isn't right. Apple's mail supposed to be pretty good, too, built into OS X?
Apple mail's very good. I don't actually use it because its IMAP support isn't as good as I'd like.
And I'll tell you why I don't use it. Eudora gives me the ability to make buttons for anything that's in a menu, including transferring to different mailboxes and whatever. Line up a ton of these little one-click does it instead of a drag. But it also allows me to do Apple scripts. For example, I can forward an email to my assistant, and I cannot do that with Apple's mail. It has a ton and a ton and a ton of Apple script commands, but not enough to send a mail, only the text, not the attachments.
You'd think it would.
Yeah, you think it would.
Oh, that's brain dead.
And a few of the other things that I use scripts for, I couldn't do in it.
You could just make a call, though, right, Waz? And that just happens, right, in the next version?
Yeah. Actually.
That would be cool.
I get involved in more important things, like, you know, making sure my Razer phone is going to work with the OS X.
You do a lot of Apple scripting?
I do a little now. I used to do a lot.
It's fun. It's really fun. It's really nice to have that scriptability in the... Have you tried Automator at all?
No, not yet. I actually just brought it up and played with it and didn't think, oh, no, this doesn't seem to do as much as I'd want.
Right, right. Well, you're probably like more powerful programming languages anyway.
No, not really. I was going to say,
Waz and I both came from an assembly language land, and I'm still coding everything Waz in assembly language.
Yeah, still think that way.
Yep. Really? You think in assembly
language? I better watch what I'm saying.
You think about registers and moves and you never multiply, you just add over and over again, things like that.
No, I like simple, actually simple, easy to use for anybody languages. You know, like Fortran and Basic were once a long time ago.
And what Waz probably means is that when he's coding in a higher level language, he's thinking about what the compiler has to do, so he writes in a way that is probably compiler friendly.
Well, that's old school.
Yep.
I doubt very many people think about the compiler or the assembler anymore.
Nobody cares.
And that's why software is 800 megabytes and can't fit on a CD.
The irony of software to me has always been the following, which is that if you have, and I present this sometimes when I give talks, I said, let's say you want to sell something, and you have two DVDs that for sale with software on, that say the program's exactly the same. Both discs do exactly the same thing, no difference whatsoever. And one of them is tight assembly language code, and the whole thing runs in 50K. The other one is 500 megabytes. Which one will outsell the other? Always, you get more. You obviously, people buy. Well, it's bigger. It must be better. They look for bloated code.
Same reason the computer book publishers want thicker books, not thinner books.
I'll tell you though, John. My web server has been up for 14,000 hours now, and it's running at about 0.7% CPU utilization, just doing nothing because all the code that I wrote for my site is in assembler, and it just sits there and it never dies.
I thought you used IIS.
I do have IIS, and I have a custom DLL that I've glued to it that does all the work.
So IIS is just kind of sitting there
it just sort of does the protocol front end stuff, and all of the, you know, shields up and e-commerce and everything is an assembler, and just takes up no time, and it's just rock solid.
And that's why all your URLs are so goofy.
Well, now you need to get an artist or something, Steve, so the thing doesn't look so crummy.
I really do.
He's being honest.
He's absolutely right. It's really looking like, you know, 10 years ago.
So
Leo,
nice.
Leo, I have a subject to toss out.
Yes, Steve.
Well, as we know, Hillary Clinton is opposing burning the American flag, but she's also for a law curbing game sales to minors. I don't think we have to comment too much on it.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it should be a law that you can't sell games to minors, but I don't, as a parent, I don't mind it. Did you let your kids, when they were younger, did you let them play violent games?
Absolutely. I just believe that everything, that any fiction, any books, any TV shows, any movies.
It's just fiction. And the kids know
that. I feel the same way. We did the same thing here.
Yeah.
Kids are fine.
And my kids are mass murderers, so there you go.
Some of the weirdest kids never, you know, you keep this stuff away from kids, and, you know, most of the time they reject it on their own.
Times have changed, though. I mean, the video games now, I mean, look at Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. It's not only very realistic, but the things that you're doing to people are heinous. And I think it's a little different than it was even a few years ago.
You know, it's disgusting, but it seems to me that the kids just get some sort of perverse thrill out of playing it. And I don't know that this increasing the crime rate. It's probably lowering it.
It is.
You know, it's like those Japanese offices that have all those punching bags, and you can go to a punching bag room where there's pictures of the bosses, and you can punch away at them. Gets it out of your system.
I always said I see it, but I know it's a movie.
Right. Right, you know the difference. Well, I'll tell you, I agreed with you guys, and my tune only changed when my son, 11-year-old son, said, "Come here, look what I can do." And this is in Vice City. He blows some guy's head off, and the blood spurts straight up, and then he kicks the head down the street. I said, "You're 11 years old. I think you shouldn't be playing that game anymore."
But it's a little bit like jokes and political correctness. It's like they had that Japanese prime minister riding a Segway the other day, and some of my friends were commenting, "Well, he can't drive anyway."
Oh, jeez. You send your email to...
Yeah, it's just... but us.
Yeah, anybody but us.
Well, I understand that, yeah. But I mean, most 11-year-olds... I don't know how many 11-year-olds want to play that game, but...
They all do. My son
Well,
did.
Then let them play. I mean, it seems to me... I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the adverse effect. I have strong feelings about the simulator aspects of a lot of these games, because simulators are known to be the way you can learn things.
Well, you can't... have it both ways. If you're saying the simulator aspect works, this kid's got a simulator for beating the hell out of people.
I agree. And my comment's always been, when somebody asked me about, well, I let my kids play Grand Theft Auto, I say, well, I don't think these kids are going to ever steal a car, but if they ever take it up, they're going to be really good at it.
Lots of practice on the carjack.
So, I mean, you know, at least giving them a break there.
And at least your kid won't be a network administrator. In that case, he's out of the house.
That's
curiously
right.
One of them became just that.
Oh, well, now we know why. One last story I kind of want to get into is this Wikipedia story. It kind of never dies. Of course, we talked about John Siegenthaler and his whining and moaning about Wikipedia. And now, unfortunately, with all the attention it's been getting, Wikipedia has been getting vandalized. Somebody changed Jimmy Wales' article in Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, the creator of Wikipedia, to say that a hit squad from the Siegenthaler family had assassinated him. Which I think is actually pretty funny. I'm sure that got fixed right away. Ironically, Nature did a study that just came out of articles. They took 42 articles from Wikipedia and the Encyclopedia Britannica and found that, vandalism aside, that Wikipedia was very nearly as accurate as the Britannica, that on average there were 4 mistakes per article in Wikipedia and 3 mistakes per article in Encyclopedia Britannica. That's pretty darn good.
You know, the follow-up to that, Leo, is the fact that some people came out of the woodwork and admitted that they wrote both for the Encyclopedia Britannica and Wikipedia.
There you go.
I mean, it's a lot of the same people putting the stuff up. There's people out there that really like to get information out, accurate information out to the public in any way they can, and they do it. They do it some, obviously, mostly anonymously for Wikipedia.
I think I'm very sad if Wikipedia goes by the ways. And now, Jimmy Wales has implemented a number of administrative changes. He says, it's not not news, but I think it's news. For instance, now they're requiring registration before you can post. They're thinking about sandboxing people who are brand new and not letting their posts maybe have some sort of validation on their posts before they appear. I hate to see it modified in any way. I think Wikipedia is really great. But I guess if these modifications need to happen to make Wikipedia survive, it's worth it.
Well, you know, the other possibility is maybe it's already gotten to the point where it has enough critical mass and enough information that we don't really need to add more stuff to it.
Shut it down. Well, there's always going to be new stories.
Somebody should spider it, by the way, as we speak, so we don't have to worry about losing this data. But
save it. That's a very good point, yeah.
But the point is, you know, do we really, I mean, how much more stuff needs to be put on Wikipedia? I mean, it's already a great resource. I mean, if they just froze it in time right now and started over, it would be okay with me.
You sound like one of those guys. Nothing new will ever be invented. This is the way. Everything good's been invented already.
And to say that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's like, you know, if they froze it in time right now, as opposed to shutting it down.
Well, all right, I agree there.
I wouldn't complain.
It's a
about
good
it.
News source too, though. I mean, Wikipedia's news is actually very up to date and very good on big stories. Anyway, have you ever looked up your article in Wikipedia?
I don't look up my article anywhere. I think I did. Somebody did send me the link to it in Wikipedia, but
so you,
sure it was
you haven't
okay.
looked at it to see if it's all right or make any changes to make it more accurate.
No, none of them are all right. I don't ever make changes. It'd take too much time.
They've all got mistakes. Huge mistakes.
What I do is I read the mistakes and then I say that's who I have to be because that's who I am. That's history.
That's your public persona.
It doesn't take more than 5 minutes to fix a Wikipedia post.
You press the edit button and fix it.
Yeah, Woz is reverse engineering himself to be accurate.
Do you feel that's an interesting, getting back kind of full circle to our original questions about celebrity, I guess you must feel some of the pressure or the weight of history on your shoulders, that you are kind of what history says you are. If you've given that up, huh?
No, I never felt that for ages and ages, and now I feel it a little bit.
You've just given up.
Well, what do you mean? I am what history... Well, yeah, a lot of the mistakes that are written into history, into books.
Yeah.
It just becomes... Yeah, it's not worth fighting. You've got to give it up.
Interesting.
You are what people want to see you more than you are yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know who you are inside. I mean, that's not going to change. I guess there's two Wazes. There's the public Waz and the real Waz.
Sure. Oh, I never think about anything else.
There's only one me.
I am what I am.
Leo, we are a clone. Check under your eyelids for two red dots.
You're right. Anyway, this has been a lot of fun. I think we have to do this again. In fact, Woz, we're going to be doing the show from Macworld Expo on the Tuesday after the keynote. I imagine there'll be some big stories. And if you knew, of course, you couldn't tell us now. But maybe after the fact, you can come by and say hi. Talk a little bit about what Apple's got coming out in 2006.
Woz, how connected are you to what goes on at Apple Corporate? Are you still in the loop?
I do not try to stay in the loop, like, what is Apple working on in the future? Try to be one of the people that might be privy to some of the knowledge that used to get leaked as rumors, and really, I think it messed up the company, and it's not in high regard. I think I would, if I tried to know the rumors of what's really going on, the secrets, I would know. It'd be suspicious, like, even am I trustable?
Interesting.
I don't try to know that. I try to keep up with the latest announced products and software, hardware, how it works, and just download a lot of it and play with it as much as I have time.
What is your business relationship with Apple? Are you on the board? Or do you have any relationship?
Nope. I have a small salary. I report to Steve Jobs. I talk to him on the phone once in a while and tell him what I think is, you know, not working with some product usually, or
very
just
cool.
Personal talk.
Knowing Apple, he's probably one step away from being sued.
No, come on. No.
Okay, I had to have my one Apple joke in there. Come on.
So you think the rumors and all the leaks were actually a very bad thing for Apple at that time?
I think the element of secrecy works better for the company in selling its products and having a lot of excitement when they come out, and the sort of gotta have this one mentality. Everything from Apple is only brought out if you gotta have it. And then also the company doesn't overbuild. They build it way too much, then you have to junk some.
It sure would be nice to know when the next iPod is going to come out so you could decide whether you want to have it for 1 week or not.
The Pequeño. Did you see that? I'm sure you all did.
So the Micro, yeah.
The Micro. The Inviso.
The Inviso.
That's the Saturday Night Live bit that was so very funny. I'll put a link.
So many funny bits came from the Switch campaign, too.
Did they? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
my
right.
My favorite one, if you can look it up, you can probably find it, besides the actual real one with that stoner girl. My favorite one is the guy who's the Canadian who switched from being an American, and he talks about the smelly money. Try to find one, anyone out there. Just look, I think, Canadian guy switch ad.
I'll put a link in the show notes. I'll find it.
Boy, our money is smelly. I never thought about that.
You know, that's right. Steve comes up to Toronto every month. It's nice, clean money up there, isn't it?
It really is.
Always crisp and fresh. Fragrant, almost. Now, a lot of it's because they don't use dollar bills. They have loonies, $1 coins, and $2 coins. They don't have coins. Steve wouldn't have his favorite prank to play anymore. He goes and buys those. Do you still get the $2 bills in a big?
I sure do. And one of my favorite lines is, "You can still smell the ink," and that starts them thinking they were just printed.
Hey, I do that. You know, they came out with a new batch of those in about 3 or 4 years ago. Another big bunch of. I buy a couple hundred dollars worth of $2 bills and pass them out. I like to take them to farmers markets.
Oh,
they just love them.
You don't do what Waz does. Tell
them
what you do.
The 2003-2004 series was the latest. I bought them also before that, but not back as far as when they used to print the serial number in red ink. What I do is I buy them in large sheets of 32 and get printer to cut them down to sheets of 4 each, put them into pads of 50 sheets each so they look like pads of paper with cardboard backing, and then perforate them so you can tear them off like green stamps, and then they smell like funny money, and they look like they have the same serial number on each bill when they come on a sheet. And I tell the stories in a way that I give myself a point if a person won't take them because they think they're counterfeit. And I lose a point if they accept them because they accept them.
By the way, the ones that were printed with the red serial numbers were actually U.S. notes. They weren't Federal Reserve bills.
Yeah. And my favorite line with funny money, too, is these meet the specs of the U.S. government. So by law, they are legal tender. Why would you ever say such a thing? Everyone thinks they must be. How can you get away with that?
You know, I talked to a guy that worked at the printing company, or he worked for the Federal Reserve. So I can't remember exact title, but he said that you can buy what he liked to do as a gag. He'd buy a big sheet uncut.
That's what I do.
You can take the uncut ones, and he'd bring a pair of scissors with him, and then
he'd do
a 20.
He cut a bill out. It was wild.
I used to go around Los Gatos. They only sold ones and twos this way back then, and I would pull out a big sheet of twos and unfold it and cut out a weird shape pattern that had the right number of twos. I did it many times, but then they added $5 bills, then tens and twenties, and just recently, just this month, I think they added fifties.
I like the pad idea, though. I didn't know about the pad idea.
I like the pad idea, too. That would be cool.
I'll bring it to Macworld and show you.
All right. Okay. Bring your pad, and
I wonder what happens when you try to pass one of those through customs, and they open up your baggage to inspect.
Not only do I tell them that it meets every spec of the U.S. government, so by law, it is legal tender, but I tell them the Secret Service has approved it 3 times, which is true, and one of the times I actually gave them a fake ID I'd printed up on a dye sublimation printer back before anyone could make a realistic photo ID. And it was based on a Department of Defense card, but I changed to Department of Defiance. It says laser safety officer, and I have an eye patch in the picture. And every airplane for 5 years took that as my ID.
You're
and
kidding.
So did the Secret Service. So did the Secret Service.
That was pre-911, it must have been.
Homeland Security have you in jail in a minute. Also known as the Secret Police.
No one.
Pre-911, I also brought long 6-inch knives onto every plane ride I took, but they were ceramic knives. I got all the metal out of my pockets, walked through the metal detector with a ceramic knife, and then I would talk about how their knife was dull and I hope the steak is tender. And then I'd pull mine out, and the passengers would get a little upset, and the stewardesses would say, wow, plastic knives.
Oh, man. Well, I'm
glad we better put these. We better put these in a book. We better get him off.
I'll have photos in my book.
Everything's in the book. So look for the memoirs. And actually, Gina may. I'm hoping. I'm trying to get Gina to join us. She says she will every time. And she never does.
She hates us.
She loves us. She's got a little kid, but she'll definitely come to Mac World Expo. I'm hoping we can get Gina too. This has been so much fun. Waz, you've got to make this a regular stop. Anytime you're available, we'd love to have you on Twit.
Well, this has been real easy and fun. Glad to be with all such a great crowd.
It's so great. It's John C. Dvorak at dvorak.org/blog. Always a pleasure. Kevin Rose, it's been nice to hear from you. When are we going to see you again?
Next time you have a twit, I'm here.
Are you? Yeah, we're doing it. We're going to take Christmas week off because, I mean, nobody should have to twit on Christmas.
But you know, Kevin, the internet is global. So
yes.
No matter what country you're in, you could be participating.
Well, I thought we were doing it live.
I think a best of twit would be good for Christmas.
I'll do a best of twit if I have the time. Unless you want to do it, John. You're welcome. I'll give you all the tapes.
I can't hear you. I can't hear you. What happened? Hello?
You lost
him.
But December 30th, we're live, Kevin. If you can come, that'd be great. And but do keep, I would like everybody to keep, what is that, January 10th? I think that's the 10th, which is Tuesday of Macworld Expo open, because we're going to do a special event at the Zeum. Seating will be limited. We'll have a way of getting tickets to everybody who wants to come. I think we can seat about 200 people in the audience, but that's going to be a lot of fun. And I think I have a feeling, I know Waz can't say or won't say anything or doesn't know anything, but I have a feeling there's some big announcements there, and I'm looking forward to talking about that, chewing those over as we do in our twit fashion. Steve Gibson, thanks. We'll see you next on Security Now on Thursday.
Actually, we're taping on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Wednesday morning.
We'll tape on Wednesday, and we'll put it out on Thursday because it's getting close to the holidays. I have to go visit family and stuff. Anything you want to plug, Waz, besides the book?
Oakley Razor Wire Bluetooth is great. Bought one of those, and then I thought I lost, so I bought another. Right, the Oakley store, you know, it's fashion. Sold as fashion, along with the Razor phone.
Are you a snowboarder?
The Oakley store is right next to the Apple store in New York, and I got the first one back, so I put one on the left ear, one on the right ear. I carry two cell phones on me now, and I can talk to two people at once. Or if I call one person and he conferences the calls, I call him from both sides of my brain. My left brain can talk to my right ear, and my right brain can talk to my left ear, and it echoes and echoes and echoes, and it sounds like I'm a god.
And on that note, I'd like to close out the proceedings. Thanks to AOL Radio for providing the bandwidth for This Week in Tech. You can listen to us on the AOL Radio podcast channel, aolmusic.com. I'm Leo Laborde. Another twit, wow, is in the can.